Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. The Lakers making big moves in free agency as well as on the trade market. We've got a ton to talk about on today's show. Were they the right moves? What do they do from here? All the sorts of things that we're going to get into. Before we dive into everything, if you haven't done so yet, just double check for me real quick. See if you're subscribed to the channel. If you're not, hit that subscribe button. And don't forget to follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. He's Jovan Buha, Pete Zayas. I'm Trevor Lane. Guys, hey, we got some action. And that's for sure from the Lakers.
Heck yeah. And I think we have some difference of opinion here too. So it should be a fun show. Ooh.
It was a flurry of moves, but hey, the Lakers got their center of the future. So to me, before we start breaking things down, I think it was a successful offseason. They got the guy that they needed in terms of a foundational piece. So now we can get into the minutia.
Okay. I mean, I guess let's start there. So the Walker Kessler trade, right? You're going to send, it's a four-year, $130 million deal for Walker Kessler to be the center of the future for the Los Angeles Lakers. Jovan, I know you and I both really liked, had him at the top of our list as the target for the Lakers at the center position. I'm going to get Pete's thoughts on that in just a moment. Before your $130 million deal, of course, the standard now player option with every contract that goes out from the Lakers, and they give up two unprotected firsts plus a couple of swaps, which could be valuable, could have no value, depends on how things play out in those seasons. So essentially, this is pretty much going all in to get Walker Kessler. Pete, how did you feel about this move for the Lakers, prioritizing Kessler and then what they gave up to get him?
I am thrilled that we got Kessler. Okay. It went from, he was the only guy on my list of centers that I was like, I would be thrilled if that was the outcome. I start from a place of skepticism about the Luka and Austin pairing, but if you're going to make that work, I've maintained that you need to have a third partner in that is a defensive stalwart in the front court, but also competent enough on the pick and roll in a multitude of scenarios, whether it's Luka getting blitzed or whether it's rolling to the basket and being able to finish or dive out of the corner out of a cut, that you have to have a level of offensive competency where you can't just be Rudy Gobert, frankly, and just dominate the rim protection and rebounding. And when I was going through the league, I was like, there is one guy that I think is available that would suit that. And it got really bleak after that. I had so much anxiety prior to this offseason that like they weren't going to get that guy and it was going to be that just a backup and that they were going to go a couple of the backup type of route. So Jovan, I know we'll talk about the compensation in the moment, but you had a great write-up yesterday on Twitter of your extended thoughts that I thought you really emphasized the idea of a foundational piece and how like some guys are foundational pieces and some guys are supporting pieces. I thought this exact type of player was essential to what they needed to really maximize both Luka and Austin. And again, Kessler is good on his own, but I think he brings out the best in our two best players.
Could not agree more. I think, you know, I want to be consistent in my analysis here because again, we'll get into some of the stuff I did not like, but in terms of the stuff I not only liked, but loved, like I had been saying on here the last few shows and on my show the last few weeks that realistically, there was little to no chance the Lakers left this offseason with a group that was on paper on par with OKC or San Antonio. Like I thought their best case scenario was to walk out of this offseason as the clear-cut third best team in the West, but with some gap still there between them and OKC and San Antonio. So I felt the thing they needed to do was to add a long-term starter, foundational type piece at the center spot and or the wing spot, like ideally both, but at least one of those two. And they did that and they went all in. And one of the things I've been extremely critical about this front office with over the last few years has been the reticence to trade draft capital post Westbrook trade. I think they became almost overreactive and too cautious, too conservative with hoarding their picks. And it was like, well, what's it leading to? Like, obviously, you know, it ended up leading to Luka, right? And that, but that was not something that I think was in their grand plan necessarily. I think that was something that materialized in that month leading into that trade. But like that massive aside, in general, they had been pretty conservative with, you hear an asking price for a player and like the Lakers just aren't really interested. They're not interested in using draft capital to get off of bad contracts. And so they've just been kind of stuck in, I would say, the upper middle for a while there over the last few years. And finally, they cashed in. And so them going all in, them emptying the clip, I do want to give them a ton of credit. And to me, this is a successful offseason because Walker Kessler is now the starting center of the future. He's 24 years old, going to be 25 by the end of the month. He is one of the best rim protectors and shot blockers in the league. He's one of the best rebounders in the league. And I think he's going to be unlocked in the pick and roll in a way that he just wasn't in Utah because of their ball handlers and playmakers. So I think this is a success. Now, the degree of success we could get into, and I think post-Kessler, I did not love everything they did, and I questioned some of the judgment calls there, but the big thing was, like, did they nail the macro? Did they nail the big move of the summer? And in my opinion, they did, even if the steep, even if the price was pretty steep in terms of the trade price.
The price was absolutely steep. If it turns out those pick swaps have zero value, and that would happen if the Lakers are better than the Jazz in those seasons and the lottery doesn't flip-flop things or anything like that, then those pick swaps will have zero value, and it's two first-round picks. And if he is the long-term center, at his age, he could be, I mean, the farthest out you want to project in the NBA is, what, 5 years maybe? Like, that could easily be Walker Kessler. I think there is a real ceiling here where he can be the second best rim protector in the NBA behind Wemby. You look at what he does to opponents' field goal percentage around the basket. It is a massive drop off around the rim. He is that type of deterrent at the bucket. And if you're going to be building a team upon the foundation of Luka and Austin, you have to have a piece like that. So they went and they got the guy that they think is going to be their piece for the future. Jovan, to your point, yeah, this is going to be Walker Kessler's going to be living his best life, right? He's going to be living his best life now, playing with Luka, catch, finish. The offensive game a little bit limited with him, but he is going to be getting spoon-fed so many easy buckets, easy dunks, putbacks at the rim. Just do what you do, big man. Rebound the basketball, block shots, patrol the paint. I'm excited to see what he can do on the defensive side of the ball for the Lakers. The price certainly steep, and it's more so than the price. It's the opportunity cost in terms of what can you do next after this, but you landed the guy that you needed to get. And so I'm happy that they went out there. They made this move. They got this done. They didn't kick the can down the road. Value-wise, around the NBA, there's a lot of shock right now. A lot of people saying the Jazz fleeced the Lakers. They may have. We're not going to care if Walker Kessler is blocking shots for the Lakers for the next 8 years or however much time he sees. Is there an injury risk? Maybe, but I don't know that he's particularly injury prone. How much of it is? He had one kind of fluke injury last year, and the rest of it was a lot of Utah's not trying to win. So, hey, you stubbed your toe. Go take a seat over there, and we're going to lose some basketball games. Thank you very much. I think this is a very nice move for the Lakers, and I'm really excited about this one. So I guess we're all in agreement there. But apparently where we are going to deviate is with the other moves. Sandro Mamukelashvili, Quentin Grimes, Colin Sexton. I think based on the comments that you put out there online, Giovanni, you've seen mine that are on X. I like all these players in a vacuum. And that's a hard thing for me because I've been talking about how I think Colin Sexton is underrated around the NBA for years over on the NBA front office show. I've been talking about this. I have questions about the value on these deals. I was hoping to see some more team-friendly elements to these deals, and I don't think these are. I think these are very player-friendly deals. I like all of these players individually, but I have questions about how it all fits together, particularly in terms of wing defense and looking very, very deficient in that area right now. But Pete, you suggested you disagree. What do you see from these three, and why do you, I think, differ from Jovan and I in your analysis of the situation?
You know, one of my favorite basketball sayings, an assistant coach of mine taught me this, is disagree and commit. There are all sorts of in coaches' meetings where it's like, I want to start this player, or I want to run man-to-man, but this coach wants to run 2-3 zone. They think that that's best. And you end up getting on the same page, and you're never going to make everybody happy. You can't follow everybody's idea. And so you got to commit to the thing that you go to and then really go after it. If we're going to go a zone, but I thought we were going to go man, then let's go in that direction. Now, I'm of the belief that you get two superstars and a great defense, and that's the best formula for winning. And so a guy like Marcus Smart is way more appealing to me than a Quentin Grimes, right? But that idea of if you're going to put spacing around, and Rui is sort of lingering in the background of this, there's some Jonathan Kuminga rumors as well. I don't view this offseason in the past tense quite yet. I think there's one more move to be made, that if you've got, like, say, Grimes at the two or Rui at the four, or and Rui at the four, you have that legitimate type of spacing around Luka and Austin where it's like, if you're going to be something, even if it's not the thing that I would choose in a vacuum that I would want to be, like, be the hell out of it. And Grimes and Rui with Kessler setting screens and rolling hard to the basket alongside Austin and Luka. Sexton, like you said, Trevor, I didn't know that you had that opinion on him. He's a guy that I've never really liked that much, but $9 million at backup point guard? Yeah, Jimmy Collin Sexton at that. You know, like, I view him as the replacement for Kennard, and I think he's a more capable defender. I think we're going to switch a good deal less. So I don't think he's a great defender or anything like that, but there's a B-ball index card, for example, out on his defense, shows him as an A-plus pick-and-roll navigator and a D-plus isolation guy. But again, we've got our stalwart defensive guy that we should switch a whole heck of a lot less. So I think sometimes when we can be down on a player, we can take that overboard. And I think that that might be happening a little bit on Sexton, where it's like, you give me $9 million to be my backup? Like, that's a good player. I really like Mamu. I really hope we can find a defensive role for him. But that dude is – that dude's got a ton of skill. And my objective measures prior to the offseason was like, Jovan, you know, I really wanted a five outlook that I think Mamu helps us get to. We haven't had a too big look in years. So I know you're going to disagree with me some here, but I think that they have sort of a vision of what they're going for that it's not what I would choose. But I think that, hey, this is a pretty good way of applying it.
All right.
Here we go.
Deep breath. Deep breath. Here we go.
I'll say the Lakers brought me out of retirement. I had not written anything basketball related in over a year. And I wrote almost 2,000 words last night because I felt so impassioned by my thoughts and everything. So I agree with pretty much everything you said. I think where I fundamentally disagree with this front office, and it seems like just the organization, is I think they continue to prioritize offensive skill at the expense of defensive capability with their perimeter players. I made this point in my post. Like, I think now, this already might have been true pre these moves, but like, I think if you look at the top 10 teams in the NBA, which I would classify the Lakers as a top 10 team, I know some people might have put them out of there. I still think they're a top 10 team. If you look at the 1-4 defensive supporting cast, including the stars, but like, you know, just the 1-4 players on all 10 of those teams, I think the Lakers clearly have the worst collection of defensive talent among the top 10. And Denver's like maybe the team in there, if you still view them in there, I still view them as a top 10 team, where that's like the closest to LA, but I would still take Aaron Gordon or Peyton Watson if they're able to retain him, which it looks like they will be able to, far ahead of any other 1-4 Lakers defender. So my issue here is that I like to view team building through, like, you have the starting point. You now have the foundation over the next few years of Luka, Austin, and Walker Kessler. What is the greatest deficiency? What is the greatest thing that you have to protect with that starting point? Clearly, it's perimeter defense. Like, I don't think that's debatable. Like, yes, shooting is nice. Yes, advantage creation, keeping the team in the blender. Yes, attacking a closeout. All those things are great skills that I would also like to have alongside those guys. But the key thing there is, with the Luka Austin starting point, you're at such a deficit defensively with your perimeter defense that you need to offset that. And I don't think they went about their moves really trying to do that. And at best, like, at best, if we're being generous, I think the three guys they brought in are collectively average-ish defenders. There's also a case to be made that they are collectively below average. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, Colin Sexton is like similar to Luke Kennard in a lot of defensive metrics. I think he's a better defender than Luke Kennard. I'm not making that point, but like, this is not like they brought in, you know, all these all defense guys, which is the level of guys I think they need. So my big issue, where I think I diverged with what you were talking about, is like, I think the Sexton room exception contract was the mistake here, where if you look at both Marcus Smart and Kelly Oubre are making less money on 2-year deals. So if you sold me on like, all right, Colin Sexton, long-term play here, he's our sixth man of the future, or he's our bench backup of the future, okay. It was a 2-year deal. And for 2 years, I would rather take the gamble that Marcus Smart stays healthy, or that Kelly Oubre — I think Kelly Oubre honestly might have been the most appealing, because he at least gives you some of that like wing size. I think he has more utility offensively than Marcus in that scoring perspective. So that's the position to me of like, okay, Grimes, I get it. I think he's better as a six man than like your starter, but okay. Mamu, we'll see if they're able to move him into a bench role. I think that'd be more appropriate. Sexton's the one where I'm like, I think you have a far better likelihood of finding a scoring guard off the bench for cheap than like a true playable wing defender. Those guys, more often than not, if they're a minimum guy, the reason they're a minimum guy is because they're not playable in the playoffs. Like people, you know, Matisse Thybulle or some of these guys, like those are fringe playoff guys. Whereas I think, you know, an Oubre or a Smart, and I use those guys specifically because it was the same deal structure and they're both, you know, $3 million almost cheaper than Sexton. So like, that's where I diverge the most is like, it was once again, Trevor, we've talked about this so many times on here. When faced with a choice, I think they always lean offense over defense. And when also faced with a choice, they lean small scoring combo guard over wing defender. And this to me has just been a blind spot of the front office for 5 years now, post 2021. And I'm like, I honestly, it sounds crazy maybe to some, but like I would dramatically feel differently about this entire situation if Marcus Smart or Kelly Oubre was in that Colin Sexton role. Like I would just feel so much more confident about the balance of the rotation, the makeup of the roster. I think you could go find some scoring bench guard for the minimum if you really need to, or you clear the space to go find that guy. But to me, that should have been a far greater priority than like, we need someone to help run the offense for 20 minutes off the bench. Like, no, you need a starting high level defensive wing. And we could debate how good Marcus will be over the next couple of years, how good Oubre is. But I just think that was a clear blind spot that they did not address at all. And even some of the names we're hearing, I mean, Rui's not addressing that. Kuminga has his defensive upside, but like he's not a consistent defender. So even the guys they might add, that's not solving that. So I just think that was a big mistake, in my opinion, in terms of how they deployed the room exception.
Jovan, everything you just said is exactly my thoughts on this. I mean, word for word, that is exactly how I feel about the situation. I would feel so much better if Colin Sexton was a defensive Marcus Smart level players, Kelly Oubre, somebody that could give you something in terms of your perimeter defense. I think there's a lot of the Lakers' current build right now. And again, if you tell me that tomorrow, a week from now, whenever, they're going to get a couple of defensive wings, however they do it, but I feel way better about this roster build. But there's a lot of this right now that reminds me very much of the 2022 Lakers team where they pulled together all these guys that couldn't really defend and went, but it's okay. Frank Vogel, you're a great defensive coach. You're going to turn them into a great defensive team. I feel like Walker Kessler's in the Frank Vogel role right now. It's okay. Walker Kessler's going to clean up everything at the rim. And meanwhile, Kessler is just, whoa, what is going on? How do I cover for all of this? That's my concern, is the defensive side of the ball. Because the truth is that if you're going to go somewhere, you can't just be good on one side of the basketball. You got to be good on both sides of the ball as a team. We're talking about the true like top tier, like you are legit. You're winning a championship. You're top five in both. You can get there if you're top 10 in one and top five in the other. But it's very rare that we see teams that are, you know, bottom third of the NBA defensively, which I think this team could potentially be, but then top 10, maybe even top five offensively, which again, I think this team could be. I think this is going to be a badass offensive team that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I just have concerns on the other side of the ball. They address that, and a lot of my fears, a lot of my worries would dissipate. I've got some issues with the overall contract values. I didn't see very much team-friendly stuff. I wonder how much of that was putting all your eggs in the basket of this summer, and we have to do everything right now, and maybe that was used against them as a little bit of leverage there. But that's my biggest issue with this team right now. It's the perimeter defense, and I think the only clear solution to it right now, and I'm worried about this, is Adu Thiro, Cameron Carr, we need you to step in and be playable immediately. You need to be ready to go right out of the gate. That's the solution on the roster. And or Jake LaRavia, we need the three ball to reappear for you. And those are a lot of ifs. I'd feel a lot more comfortable if there were some more concrete options on this roster moving forward.
So I've got a question for both of you guys then that includes an if. Let's say they go down this route and it proves to not, they need to pivot off of it. How hard is it to get the Kelly Oubres and Marcus Smarts at the trade deadline? And Jovan, I know you want to build the team over the course of the offseason. I totally agree with this. But let's say they try this out and it proves to be true. Actually, you do need more perimeter defense. And I think they believe that, too. I talked to them. I talked to a Lakers person yesterday. And like they're like, we know that we can't ask Kessler to do everything. I'm like, sure looks like you're going to ask him to do everything right? based on the roster. And so, but they know, and I think this is part of the how the culmination of the they weren't going to be everything that we wanted them to be at the end of this offseason. But can they pivot down the line and turn the Sextons or Grimes into, or Ruiz, if they're able to resign him, into sort of the defensive equivalence of that type of player? Because I agree with your guys' point that there's an imbalance here, that, but I also don't think the type of players that we're talking about are so high level that like you can't just get them if it proves to not work out.
That's fair. I guess my pushback would be, I think they have needed that archetype for 5 years and they've not been able to. And again, like I think Marcus, for all of his warts offensively, to me, Marcus should have been in the conversation for second team all defense. I think Marcus, pretty much every metric paints him as a 90th plus percentile defender. I think he was that level. And I think people are overlooking, even in the OKC series, like, yes, they had this great defensive strategy against Shea, but a big part of their success in limiting Shea was Marcus's on-ball ability and also off-ball ability and the wrestling. And I just think Marcus, I think people are just overrating how important Marcus was to the defense. You could look at the on-off. You could look at like how good they were defensively. I mean, they're bottom five defense with Marcus off the floor. Like, I think if you just, I mean, now Kessler is going to put out a lot of this, but I also think that there's an sort of to you know, the point about, I think someone mentioned AD earlier, might've been Trevor, that it is sort of like, all right, Kessler, like, you know, I think he's a special defender. I think he's great, but similar to AD during that kind of post 2021 stretch, AD was one of the best defenders in the league. He should have been in the defensive player of the year conversation. But when he had the defensive perimeter talent that he had, it was like AD could only do so much and he would prop up the defense to a certain degree, but there was a limitation there. And Kessler, for as great as he is and as great as he could become, like, I don't think he's currently as good as that level of AD, right? So you're hoping he becomes that. So I just think you're putting a ton of pressure on him to be this all-world guy, which he's getting paid as such. So like he does have to deliver. I just think it's a ton on him that I guess I fundamentally disagree with their approach to team building. Yes. I've disagreed with it for 5 years. And I think the results have kind of been more on my side in terms of they just haven't been good enough defensively and the playoff results haven't really been there, but we'll see. Like, I just think in theory, yes, you are correct. Like, you can find that type of guy, but that has been, I think, in general, a blind spot for the front office overall is like, it is right. The Troy Browns, Juan Toscano-Anderson, Stanley Johnson, the Torian Prince. Like, it's just the recycling of this archetype that they just are not good enough on one side of the ball. And I think they've really struggled to find someone that's a two-way contributor there of a certain caliber. And like Grimes, I guess, could be that. I just think he's 6'4". He's better defending twos. And I think there's a limitation. Like, are you going to put him on the big wings? I think that's a mismatch, but we'll see.
Now, I want to throw in one thing here, because this is, you know, we live in this world where everything has to be the best thing ever or the worst thing ever, and there's no in between. So, and that is simply not true in this situation, and in most situations in life, it's not true. But I think there is a positive. So I 100% agree with Jovan. I'm not thrilled with the defense, but what are you getting out of this? I think one of the things that's important to acknowledge that by going with a Colin Sexton, adding Quentin Grimes, I think about what is the benefit of doing this? What do they get out of it? Well, think about what happened after the trade deadline last year. The Lakers went on a great run, right? March was amazing. They had that incredible streak. That was just phenomenal. That was so much fun. They're beating all these good teams and everything. But guess what? Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves were number two and number three in the NBA in minutes played per game during that stretch. They were right up there with Tyrese Maxey, and lo and behold, both guys get hurt. I think now you're in a situation where with both Grimes and Colin Sexton on there, you do have some players that can offer more support than what we would have seen last year in the backcourt from a scoring sense that Luka and Austin can lean upon a little bit more. Can you take a little bit of that pressure off of them? I think that is one. While, again, I would lean in more towards the defensive side as well, I think there are some positives going this direction, and that's one of them that I wanted to make sure that we acknowledge, that perhaps this is an eye towards, we just paid, but we're paying Luka a lot of money. We're paying Austin a lot of money. Let's make sure that we're not running them into the ground.
This is such a great point, Trevor. Like, the offense too is so predicated on the idea of we have one or two players that we can give the ball to and run a ball screen with, or just give them to it to anyway, and they're going to create advantage out of that. But last year, especially with like LeBron has lost a bit of his off the dribble ability over the last couple of years. He'd fumble the ball a lot. He wasn't that same threat in that way. He was more of a triple threat type of player as he's gotten older. And what would happen is if we had any injuries during the regular season, which happens all the time these days, we would go from Luka great at this, Austin really, really, really good at this. Then one of them are hurt or both of them are hurt. Nick Smith Jr. is the next best guy on the team at this in ways that like Colin Sexton and Quentin Grimes is just a whole different level of on-ball creation. So it's like if you're going to be a thing, be really, really good at it. And I think that that's a great point that you make that I think might have more regular season application than it does postseason application. I will say, though, and I believe this on the defensive end, as everybody loves a good defensive wing, I think guards are important too. And I remember AJ Mitchell and Jared McCain freaking cooking us because we had nobody that could keep up with them, but also they showed that they could produce on that level as well. Like that sort of scoring punch off of the bench between Sexton and Grimes will start, but at least Sexton, I think, gives the Lakers a degree of that ability to hang in that way.
All right. I want to throw things to Jovan in just a moment and talk about the dribble pass shoot ability on this team's offense and what JJ Redick could be thinking here. But first, let's get to our sponsor real quick. That is Prize Picks. We appreciate them for sponsoring the show. You can use the code HMA, play $5, get $50 instantly over on Prize Picks. The link is in the description down below. The World Cup is going on. Team USA advancing. That was an exciting match last night. I'm going to lean into the World Cup here. Leo Messi, yeah, I'm going to say he scores a goal. That tends to be what he does. And Cristiano Ronaldo, I'm going to say he gets more than 2.5 shots. If you guys want to get in on it, that code is HMA. Link is in the description. Play $5, get $50 instantly. Great promo they've got going on right now. All right. Jovan, leaning into this offensive side of the ball, J.J. Redick specifically at his postseason presser asked for more guys who can dribble, pass, shoot. And we did see a lot of teams leaning into that. Certainly the reigning champion Knicks did a bit. We saw that a little bit in their final series against the Spurs where they were running, you know, Jose Alvarado as an extra dribble, pass, shoot guy out there on the floor. Can you see something similar from this Lakers offense? Is that perhaps a benefit to leaning into the guards the way that they did, despite the, you know, dismay from you and I?
Oh yeah, and to be clear here, so I want to take a step back because we're disagreeing on just how we view, you know, a couple points of the offseason, but I want to make a couple of things clear. Like one, in a macro sense, I view this all as a successful offseason. I disagree partly with like the direction they went post Kessler. I would have gone in a slightly different direction, but they got Kessler. That is the piece that is locked in. And you know, to Pete's earlier point, you could get off of Grimes or Mamu or whatever in the future if you need to. And like, there's some flexibility there. So I want to make myself clear with that. And then really, in terms of the actual like other signings, Sexton is the one I disagree with. But, you know, the other two, I see the vision. I really like them. In general, though, with the Lakers' new offensive structure and new roster, I think like they clearly got younger. Everyone is 28 or younger on the roster. Austin is now the elder statesman. He's the new LeBron
Grandpa
of the roster.
Austin.
How is
Grandpa
that possible?
Austin, Uncle Austin. And you know, the shooting, while like, no, none of these guys are Luke or Rui from a percentage standpoint, there is a volume aspect here where I think these guys are more collectively willing to just let it fly and are also advantage creators and extenders, which I talked about earlier with the blender and attacking the closeout. And I think Mamu is going to add a really unique dynamic here with his passing and his floor spacing. And you could go double big looks. You could go with him as a stretch big in the second unit. So I think offensively, this is going to be more of what we saw to start the season from this group when they went 10-4 without LeBron, and it was Luka and Austin running the show and you know, being the engines, but guys creating and capitalizing off of that. And so I think like the offensive side, I love the vision. I see where they're going with this. And I do think, to Trevor's point, like Sexton and Grimes can take off some of the load from Austin and Luka in terms of minutes, usage. They are two athletic, quick guys who can get downhill and create advantage that way. So I think from a speed perspective, the Lakers certainly are better equipped now to match up with teams like OKC and San Antonio, especially on the offensive end. I think defensively, I have some questions of like how those guys match up with Shea or AJ Mitchell or Dylan Harper, you know, Stephon Castle. But like on the offensive end, I do think they can get downhill and create and extend some advantages, which is a really important part of LA's offense. And I would argue is a step up compared to like a guy like Rui, where sometimes there, and maybe Rui's still on the team and you know, that's its own conversation, but like sometimes he wouldn't be the best at extending that advantage, right? Or the swing and you know, the classic LeBron quote. So that to me is like, I think they have quicker processors, yeah. I guess non-LeBron division, because I think we can't overlook that loss to the offense, but in terms of like more role player for role player, I think there is a clear upgrade in skill and like a multifaceted nature to a lot of these guys compared to their counterparts.
I can't wait to see the manifestation of Redick's vision. I think this is the first team that he's gotten to coach that is really going to be aligned with what he wants to do rather than what he had to do. And that's true on both ends of the floor, even on defense. Think of the defensive centers that he's coached over the two seasons with the team. Like, this is the best, aside from AD, of course, after post-AD trade, like, this is easily the best that he's had. But from that shoot, pass, dribble perspective, Trevor, like, they've added so much. And that's one of the reasons why I feel a little better about Grimes today than I versus Smart yesterday than I did, although Jovan's point about it's actually the Sexton signing that you should be comparing Smart and Oubre to, I think that's true. But that starting two spot, I always thought, hey, you got to have a real defense forward type of type of guard between Luka and Austin to really make this work. But Grimes is a big-time Redick guy. He's a guy that worked out with him, stayed at his place. There's a great story that he told about that, that I think they really want a guy at the two spot. J.J. Redick, no shocker that he wants a two guard that can maybe have some scoring ability and ability to hit a jumper. That I think that between that and then the Mamu addition, which is just so different than any other type of player that we've had in the front court in quite some time, like – I'm really excited to see just kind of the volume that they get up in terms of three and just the spacing they're able to provide. And with Mamu specifically, yes, he's a floor spacer as a shooter, and he's very good at that. But what I'm most excited about is the passing and ball handling. Just like he's checks each one of those boxes, and I think we can sort of over-index toward the shooting in ways that the ball handling, the passing, the processing, all of that is just as important. So I'm excited to see. I think this is very much aligned with what Redick wanted to do, which is why you framed the question that you in the way that you did. And I'm just excited to see it come to life.
You know, I think one of the things that is important too for Lakers fans that are watching the roster come together and thinking about what the starting five is going to look like, it's how you slot these players. I think it's important to remember that Luka Doncic defensively is not a guard. And so when you're looking at this, I see a lot of people coming up to the, you know, wait, Quentin Grimes at the three. He's not a three. He's undersized. Oh my gosh, what are we going to do? So it's okay. Really, you should slot it with Luka nominally as the three, because that's where he's going to be defending. It's either threes or fours. Mm-hmm. And there's some concern, certainly, with Luka and Mamu being your defensive three and four. I'm not saying that, you know, skies are parted, everything is great here. But Grimes and Austin is your defensive backcourt. That's what you really need to be focusing on, and things slot a lot better. We need to think back to the 2019-2020 team. LeBron James was the point guard on the offensive end, but that doesn't mean that's who he was defending defensively. That was Danny Green. That was Avery Bradley or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope that were in those defensive roles. And so that, if we slot Grimes that way, I think that alleviates some of the concerns from Lakers fans who see Grimes and say, wait, that you can't play him at small forward. They get some PTSD from when Patrick Beverley was somehow going to be the Lakers' wing stopper and all those sorts of things. That's not going to be the role for Quentin Grimes. They're going to be using him as guard. He's got good wiggle, good burst, the ability to get to the rim. Sometimes can play a little bit too straight up, but I do like the burst, getting to the bucket. Colin Sexton can put pressure on the rim as well. I think you're going to see the Lakers. This, like I said, this can be a badass offense. I think we're going to see a Lakers team that has the ability to put teams in the blender and keep them in the blender even after they make that first or second rotation. That's one of the things that I'm really excited about with this group. But Jovan, I'll tell you the other thing that I'm excited about. I am excited about DeAndre Ayton backup center. I think that DeAndre Ayton is much better slotted in a reserve role than as a starter. That being said, my question is, can he mentally be prepared for that role as a backup? Like, where are you at? Because that's my only worry. I think DA as a backup center is great. If you get peak DA, I think it could be a wonderful role for him. I'm worried about, is he willing to mentally accept the role. What do you think about that?
I was going to follow up with, is DeAndre Ayton excited about being the new backup center? I'm not quite sure about that. And I think, I mean, it's interesting to me because the center market got all out of whack in terms of, you look at some of the contracts that have been doled out and they've been higher. Like, I think every center has been paid a little, like a little overpaid, a little 2 to 4 million AAV higher than I expected for them. Mm-hmm. With the exception of maybe Jackson Hayes. I thought Jackson Hayes got like a pretty fair market value deal for him.
And but you look at like,
and a team option. Who knew?
Trevor.
I mean, that's another, whatever. That's another nitpick for another day. But I think DA, I mean, he's at this crossroads right now again. And like, if you take a step back to last year, that was like a make good situation where it's like, okay, my stock has fallen to this point where I'm going to take this buyout. He did lose money last year. Like, he wasn't an exact, like, you know, dollar for dollar amount that he left on the table from Portland. He lost a few million dollars, which, like, you know, okay. But he did sacrifice to go to the Lakers, be the starting center, and try to embrace that Clint Capella role. And for the most part, he delivered, right? Like, I mean, there were certainly some lows, and I think he had a pretty rough series against OKC. But for the most part, especially factoring the salary, he delivered. At the same time, I look at, if there was something out there for him, and you're looking at these center contracts flying left and right, and some of these guys, in my opinion, are worse than DeAndre Ayton, and they're getting paid 60% more than him or whatever. That to me was like, I don't know how much he actually rehabbed his value league-wide or his perception league-wide. I think people still view him as largely the same player. And so he kind of had to opt in and be in this position now. So I think he's kind of facing a point where it's like, you either embrace this role and you're going to be a 15 to 20 minute a night backup, and you're going to, you know, do what you did as a starter in that condensed 2 to 3 shifts per game, or you're going to be in a really tough position next summer when you're a free agent and you're probably getting minimum offers. So I like that I think, so there is an element here of like, I think he thought that last year would put him in position to be a starter somewhere else and get the Robert Williams, Mitchell Robinson type deal at a minimum. That clearly was not out there for him. Otherwise, he would have opted out. And the fact that I think the league and the market is still so low on him, I think he's in a contract year again to kind of prove it and like save his NBA career to some extent. So I think there will be a ton of pressure and motivation on him to deliver in that role and to buy into it. And well, and ultimately it's expiring. So if he, you know, if he doesn't work over the first half of the season, you could just flip him at the deadline and, you know, that, you know, get, take back a longer term deal if you have to, you know, depending on who the player is.
I share your skepticism, Trevor. My one, you know, what's the word, silver lining with this is that if he didn't want to be the Lakers backup, like, he had a choice, and there is the opportunity for him to have maybe, like, Mo Wagner got $9 million a year from Brooklyn. I agree that he probably didn't rehab his image to a degree that teams are going to be like, oh yeah, let's give DeAndre Ayton a multi-year deal, but like a 2-year deal with a team option or something like that for a guy like DA. I think he probably could have gotten that in somewhere, in whether it's Brooklyn or somewhere else, relative to all the other contracts that have been handed out. And so, like, he at least had the choice for this or not, that or maybe he didn't expect the Lakers to get a center, but that's my hope. But yeah, Trevor, this is going to be a huge swing factor. But we always have a tendency, I think, with the Lakers to sort of view them through a deficit model and players through what they're not. You started that question through the premise of like, hey, that's a really good backup center if this works out. So like, tell me, what do you think of that? Let's say DA does have the right mentality about this, right attitude. He did make the choice to do it. Like, what does that look like with DeAndre Ayton as your backup center?
I think you get a quality rebounder that is certainly somebody that you could use out there on the floor, spelling Walker Kessler. I think that the little push shots in the paint and things like that, especially what we saw early on in the season back in October, November, it started to fade away a little bit in December, but in a more limited role, can you get him really capitalizing on those things? And can you get him in the mindset of, okay, I'm a 2-shift player. Now I'm going to be in there and I'm going to get my 7-minute shift. I'm going to get my 15 minutes a night. I have to push down on the gas pedal as far as I possibly can while I'm out there. Can you get a higher energy version? Not that you're going to get high energy DeAndre Ayton, but higher than if he's trying to slot in for playing like 25 minutes plus a night. That's going to be critical for this. But I think you've got a guy that can help you on the glass. He's nowhere near the rim protector. Of course, the Walker Kessler is. There's a reason why you went and you made that move. But I like the idea. You know, I believe we talked about last show that there's something that feels un-Laker-like of just not having a real presence in the paint throughout the game. When you think about all the greats, and I'm not saying Walker Kessler is going to be Shaq or anything like that, but I think the Lakers can go into this season knowing that not only do you have 48 minutes of strong center play between Walker Kessler and then DeAndre Ayton coming off the bench, who I think legitimately could be one of the best backup bigs in the entire NBA in that role, but then you also have the five-out option with Mamukelashvili. So I think the Lakers have taken a significant step forward at the center position. I would have liked to have still even retained Jackson Hayes just for that mind-meld lob threat with Luka, but I'm not going to complain too much if you've got DA and Kessler as your center pairing. I really think this can be one of the very best center duos in the league.
Yeah, I think it might be. Do they have a top five center room in the NBA right now? I think they're in that conversation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, okay, Wemby, Jokic, Hartenstein, and Chet. And like, I mean, they have like a million other bigs. But after that, I think you start getting to the Lakers.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I agreed 100%. Yeah. And that's exciting. That's exciting to see the Lakers have that kind of presence in the paint. Now, also, I want to finish with this on Ayton, and then we'll get into some of our chat questions and comments. Also, want to say everything we've been talking about the center market, how in demand the center position has been. That's also going to be a very tradable contract. It, you know, it, mm-hmm. obviously it can go south, but $8.1 million on an expiring deal for a center who in a pinch can start for you. That's something that I think there will be interest in around the NBA. If we get into the season and the Lakers find a reason to pivot, I'm not saying you're going to get some tremendous value back for him or anything like that, because if there was this tremendous demand for DeAndre Ayton, he's probably opting out and signing a different contract. But I do think this is also, if they need to, a very movable contract with a lot of flexibility here for the Lakers. And it's a big part of why I was more than fine with him picking up the player option. And I think this is actually going to be a pretty good situation for the Lakers.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get into the chat questions and comments. First, need to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is SeatGeek. We appreciate them sponsoring the show.
See the light at the end of the tunnel, finally. When we get to the finish line, I'm excited to relax a little bit this summer, get out of the house, go have some fun. Now that my wife and I live in Colorado, we're by Red Rocks. And so I'm excited to go see some concerts this year. I'm actually very excited to go see the Tedeschi Trucks Band. They're coming to play a two-night set. And I think Derek Trucks is one of the best guitarists in the history of the world. So very, very excited to get out, which is why I want to give the sponsor of today's video, SeatGeek, a huge shout out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. And it's really just about how simple the process is. It's so easy to open up the app, look at your map of all the seats, but you can sort by deal, which is my favorite feature, and they rate every single ticket on a scale of 1 to 10 by how good the deal is. So I know if I'm picking from these ones at the top, I'm getting an amazing deal. And as I work further down the list, obviously it might not be as good of a deal, which kind of just simplifies the process for me and helps me know that I'm getting the right ticket for the right price. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. Major League Baseball is in full swing. The NBA and NHL playoffs are here. The NFL schedule is coming out soon. And you can now get World Cup tickets on SeatGeek. And by the way, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use code COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code COLLECTIVE10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek.
All right. Shout out to SeatGeek and shout out to Jason.
Yeah.
All right, let's go. Let's start here. Tyler said, I know these aren't big names, but if our new guys hit and do their role well, this is going to be a very good team still. No egos, 100% hustle and effort and playing fast pace. Would love to see Rui back and add Zaire Williams. What are you guys at? Where are you guys at on the wing? Like, what's, while grounded in reality, what's the ideal next moves for this Lakers team?
I'd love to see Rui back. I you know, I know he's got his flaws, but we're starting four away. By the way, my optimism about this offseason will be much lower if Mamu is our starting four. Like, I'm not starting from the position of that the offseason is in its past tense yet. I think we did the vast majority of the work on it yesterday. And Jovan, as much as I would love a defensive wing in that spot, I think the guys that sort of project that are available that are in that realistic category that Trevor's talking about, it's probably him and Kuminga. And between the two, I'd rather have Rui. But is there somebody out there that's an alternative to those guys? How do you see that position?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to throw out some names, and I think it's kind of grim. I do agree with Zaire Williams. But to me, he's more of a project and someone who's still developing. Like, he's shown some flashes. I don't think he's consistent enough yet, as we saw with Brooklyn deciding to reject the team option. I think if he was the player that he can be consistently, he would be on the Nets, in my opinion, especially for that, you know, reasonable salary, a little bit above the minimum. I think Matisse Thybulle is probably the guy out there that is the closest to this. He is extremely limited offensively, and despite actually being on paper an above average 3-point shooter, is still a guy who's going to be treated as a non floor spacer and teams will cheat off of. And can't dribble or pass, or he can shoot, you know, in relatively low volume and be average to above average in that regard, but, you know, not really an offensive rebounder, not going to drive and create. So he's a pretty limited offensive player, which is why I think he could be a minimum guy. And also not really a guy that, if you add him, you might start him as like a placeholder in a more extreme case, or if he's in a bench role, like, he still to me is more that ninth or 10th guy in your rotation. Ideally, I like Ochai Agbaji, but he's actually an unrestricted free agent. They ended up not offering him the qualifying offer, so that's someone I think could be worth a swing on. Josh Okogie, who, like, checks the box with the shooting and the defense, but I also saw how he was played off the floor in the Lakers series, and I thought he was a real liability. And from a Lakers perspective, I was like, anytime Josh Okogie was on the floor, I felt like the Lakers were going to win those minutes, which they often did. So there's a limitation there with him, but that's kind of the group you're looking at. I would kind of do the inverse of what Pete said. Of, I've been looking at this as if this is the roster, because I think some of the trade stuff, people are acting like it's a little bit you could just stretch Vando, obviously, but I don't know that anyone's taking on Vando for anything below a first round pick. So your option there is either stretch Vando or Vando's on the team. And then maybe you could dump Jake or Dalton or DeAndre. I think they need DeAndre now, and then Jake they kind of need too. So I guess it's Dalton, but that's only creating $4 million in space. So I guess I'm more curious to see like how they try to fill that spot. I'm viewing it, or my current analysis is like, this is the roster. If they make the Rui move, the Kuminga move, whatever, I will have a new perspective on things. But I'm coming at it more as like judging the current thing rather than projecting what might happen. But I'm with you that, like, ideally they do something else here, and then I will be more optimistic overall.
Do you think the names that you mentioned are all Batman guys between Okogie, Thybulle, all that?
Probably. I could see Thybulle maybe going a little bit above there, and maybe someone uses like the biannual exception or something like that on him. But I mean, it's been a pretty tough market for the like perimeter guys, where you look at Jordan Goodwin, Marcus Smart, Kelly Oubre all got below what I thought their AAV should have been. Those guys, I think, are all better than Thybulle. So to me, you know, if those guys are getting $6.5 million, or, you know, Oubre got a little bit more, I think, you know, Thybulle's probably a $5 million at highest AAV guy.
That's one thing that swings in the Lakers' favor, is that you could find some potential guys that can play on the wing out there for a veteran minimum. The challenge is, I agree with Pete, I don't think Mamukelashvili should be the starter. So you're out there going through the bargain bin here of veteran minimums looking for a starter. And that's going to be certainly a challenge for them. But this question came in, and I was asked this last night on my show as well, something similar to this. If you could give up Vando and Dalton Connect for Patrick Williams from the Bulls, would you do that? You're taking on, it's about $24 million in salary in total, and Williams has a third year at $18 million past when, you know, Jared Vanderbilt would have dropped off. Dalton Connect, we're assuming they don't pick up his team option for not this coming season, but the season after. So it's extra salary that you're taking on, but you open up a roster spot and you would add a wing player. Would you have any interest in doing something like this?
He's got 3 years, $18 million a year with a player option in the third year. So I'm not a Patrick Williams guy, so
yeah,
I'm
think
probably
he,
out on that.
I see the vision, and it's, you know, you're trying to sit salary dump our bad salary for a little more of yours, but a little more possibly useful player. I think Patrick Williams kind of stinks. I think that, like, just stretching Vando is the cleanest solution. That I think that that money's not going to matter that much the next two off seasons, and just how the Lakers have structured things. So I think that's the way to get off of Vando. Are you a Patrick Williams guy, Trevor?
No, no, not at all. And so I wouldn't even see it. I wouldn't do it either. I was just, I've been asked this before, and I was curious to get your thoughts on it, but no.
He said no.
No.
You're almost offended that he posed the question.
No, I was like, no.
Do I look like a Patrick Williams guy to you?
Oh man, I need to go on another rant here, an anti-Patrick Williams rant.
That, no, okay, let's put a pin in this for a second. That Trevor rant was epic. That was like that was incredible stuff.
That was me in the moment reacting. See, that's how you know, like the fan. I'm not gonna hide the fandom. I can't. No. It's gonna come out in those moments. And I tried to clarify, like, hey, I was reacting to the contracts, and those player options were pushing me over the edge there.
What is the player? I've got to ask about this. So first of all, one of my favorite things is every basketball person that really knows their stuff and that's worth a damn, they all have these, like, to me, very charming pet peeves. And one of yours seems to be player options. Can I get just your like, why does this irritate you to the degree that it does?
It's not so much player options. It's more my big picture concept of where the current NBA is and the need for positive value contracts. And player options very much limit your upside on these moves. I think that what we're seeing a lot of NBA teams do right now is protect themselves against downside. The Robert Williams contract is an extreme example of this, but you've got, you know, only $5 million guaranteed in the second year, non-guaranteed in the third year. The Duncan Robinson contract, hey, if we're going to overpay, if we're going to pay higher than market value, the exchange that we want back for that is we want some future flexibility. So we're only going to guarantee $2 million on the second year of that. We're seeing more teams protect themselves against the downside while also opening up more possibility for upside. You look at why are the San Antonio Spurs able to deal with De'Aaron Fox being on a bad contract and not really blink? Well, because they have Wemby, they have Steph Castle, they've got Dylan Harper, they've got these guys on below market value contracts. It's a great way to balance out your roster so that if you do make a mistake, you've got some other guys that can help make up for that and provide more bang for your buck. But if you're paying everybody at what their value is, that limits your ability to have players that are actually going to outproduce their contract and only increases the probability that you're going to have players underproduce their contract, which right now we're in an NBA where negative value contracts, apparently, unless your name is Paul George, teams are allergic to them. So for all of those reasons, it's my big picture conceptual look at value in the NBA and the way teams are operating that I want to see the Lakers have more opportunity for above market value players that are producing above what the value of the contract is, and at least have the potential for that and protect themselves a little bit from the downside.
I love that. It's a great answer.
All right, let's go here. And that's my more rationed take than the crash out. Can the Lakers sign and trade Rui into another team's cap space, like say the Nets, creating a trade exception they could then use to bring a player in via trade? Say we expanded Smart to Houston into a double sign and trade, or for Tari, or take back DFS and a draft pick. Well, none of these contracts are signed just yet. In theory, if you were to move Rui, then you would get, if you were just moving to pure cap space, you would still have the same amount of cap space as before. You know what, though? We went through this last night, and everything is a jumble at this point in my brain. I went over this with Keith last night, I believe. Time has no meaning in the NBA offseason. This could have been 2 days ago. But there was a reason why this doesn't ultimately work out that way for the Lakers. I can't recall off the top of my head. Maybe
isn't it because they had to rescind Rui's rights for the cap space?
Right. They rescinded Rui's rights, but then you'd use the cap space to sign him.
But I mean,
then
they use the cap space. They're using this cap space. I mean, their cap space is gone with the moves that they're making. So I don't see how that's, I mean, I think it's just as straightforward as they rescinded the rights to Rui to do the moves that they're doing. So they no longer have Rui's rights to just sign and trade him. Like, they would have to use an exception or cap space to sign and trade or to sign Rui, which, like, sign and trade, I think you have to have the rights to execute that with the player, if I'm not mistaken. Right. And which then, if they did that with Rui, the incoming salary would then come at the expense of their cap space.
In this situation too, you would have to incentivize the Nets to do this, because why sign and trade? Why not just sign him outright if you're the Brooklyn Nets? Mm-hmm. Because they have cap space themselves. The only way a sign and trade would work is if there was a team that didn't have cap space, and in that situation they'd be sending salary back, which then would screw up the Lakers' other moves.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go here. Two firsts for Kessler, two firsts and salary for Brown. Which one would you have done looking back now? Get the five or the defensive? Well, yeah, I mean, I guess that's a good question. So let's say the Lakers, rather than Walker Kessler at 30, I think it comes out of what, 32? Is that what his salary started at? Something like that.
30.2, I think. Yeah.
30.2. That's what it was. Okay. So rather than that, would you rather have Jaylen Brown at, what was he at, 50, something like that? I'll pull the salary in a moment. Would you rather burn all of your cap space plus your picks and have Jaylen Brown with Luka long-term?
So I don't view him necessarily as a defensive wing. I view him as one of your two on-ball perimeter scorers, and I think that those slots are filled. I would rather have a Luka and Brown pairing than a Luka and Austin pairing, but Brown's also, there's a reason his value was what it was, and part of that is just the numbers that he's owed. Like, you've got to pay him so much that it leaves so little left over. And really, our biggest need was that five spot. Like, I don't think we were in the game at all without this center, to the point that I was making at the beginning of the show, Jovan. And so while I like Jaylen Brown, and I think he was a little bit undervalued around the league, you go with the guy at the position of need that cost about half of what Brown's going to cost in a year or two.
Yeah. I mean, I think
$57 million, just to be clear.
No, I mean, I like, obviously from a, just like in a vacuum, which player would you rather have to try and win a championship? I would still take Jaylen Brown over Walker Kessler. I don't want to overthink that, but for what the Lakers specific core is, I don't think Jaylen Brown is the level of, like, he's better than Quentin Grimes defensively. In my opinion, he would fit the role of that the Lakers need to that degree, like more than what's currently on the roster. But I think at that point, you're acquiring him and then probably flipping Austin around the deadline. I think you'd have to go in a different direction where you're not having those three guys as your perimeter guys and not spending anything at the four or the five. So you could go that route. But I think for what the Lakers specifically needed, Kessler is probably the cleaner fit if you're going the Luka Austin road. Now, could you put Austin in the trade and maybe that allows you to lower the draft capital? And that's a different, you know, now we're going down a rabbit hole. But I don't know. Cause I think Brown's a better player. So like in a vacuum, I would rather have Brown, but for the need, factoring in the need, that's where I start to lean Kessler.
I'm with you guys as well. Like, the need is there for Kessler, but I think the Sixers got a hell of a value on Jaylen Brown. And you took a great guy trade that probably would have cost at least a first to move off of in Paul George, and you just attached one other first to him and turned him into Jaylen Brown. Like, hell yeah, you're doing that all day. The Sixers have got to be stoked right now. And they just signed Anthony Simons. That just came through too. They're loading up here. Vando for Cam Johnson, Zaire or Thybulle, maybe Rui. As far as Vando for Cam Johnson, I think the Denver Nuggets very quietly have benefited tremendously by the way the market has played out. You look at what the Chicago Bulls did. The Chicago Bulls, they said, Norman Powell, come make sure we're not bottom three. Don't let us be bottom three. We don't want to be in the relegation zone. Help us out. Score 20-plus points per game. So they spent their cap space there. They brought in Nick Claxton. Okay, they're kind of not a threat now for Peyton Watson. Maybe the Nets can still get into the mix. But the real threat's to go sign Peyton Watson to a big thorny offer sheet that the Denver Nuggets would have to match are very quickly drying up. The Lakers spent their money on Kessler. So there's not a lot of options that are going to come and force Denver into a tough spot with Peyton Watson. So I think for him, all roads lead through Denver. And that's the challenge for them. That said, I don't see Denver taking on Vando's salary to move Cam Johnson. I still think there are teams with exceptions and things that would just take him if they really decided, hey, we're so desperate to be below the second apron and all of that, that we need to move off of one of these salaries. I think they can do it without taking back a contract. If it's Cam Johnson, if it's Christian Brown, Maybe the long-term nature of that deal causes them to have to take back a little bit of salary. But I think Cam Johnson, they could move without having to take back too much money.
Yeah. Trevor, do you know how much money Denver has to shed to get under the second apron? Because that was another...
Yeah.
I've gotten this version of a question over the last 24 hours. And my thing that I still haven't looked up is like, how much money does Denver actually have to shed? Because I think the preference would be just to dump one of these guys and not take back salary. So that's where... Like if they need to shed like $12 million, then taking back Vando, you're not offsetting that gap enough because Johnson's making 21, Vando's 12 and a half. So I don't know what that number is off the top of my head, but whatever that number is obviously would be the goal of Denver in any potential trade.
Well, and a lot of it's going to depend on what's the number for Peyton Watson. If it's 20, that's one, if it's 30, that changes things too, because that's going to kick them back up. Because he's not on their books right now, but 4.6 million below the second apron is what SpotTrack currently has them at. They did add Marvin Bagley at $3.5 million on that veteran minimum. So he'll be coming in. But yeah, right now, but they do have right now on their books is still Jonas Valanciunas, who's only $2 million guaranteed out of the $10 million salary. He's already rumored to go back to Europe. Yep. I think they're going to part ways with him. And so that gives them a little bit more flexibility. So they're close, but a lot of it's going to come down to how much does Peyton Watson get? You know, if shedding Valanciunas gets them, let's call it, 14 million below the second apron, but Peyton Watson costs 25 million. Okay, you're right back up over it, and then you got to go back down even further in order to get free of that. Because remember, it's not just Peyton Watson though, too. And this is what is complicating for Denver. You know, this is without Bruce Brown. This is without Spencer Jones, who's a guy I know they would like to keep. There's other stuff they got to do as well in addition to fill out.
I'd take either one of those guys too. By the way,
me too.
For final sure. spot.
Yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So anyway, it's not an exact answer with Denver, but the more money Peyton Watson gets, the more they
shed. Look like you looked up that. I was thinking like post Watson. So it sounds like there could be within the realm of potentially taking back some salary. Cause I was just thinking if it's like sure. 20 million over, they have to just shed the player and there's, no way that they would take back salary in that case.
Yeah.
Yeah. They can take back a little bit, but again, does Peyton Watson cost 20? Does it cost 30? Like that's going to matter here. Hear me out, guys. Let Vando go, but replace him with a guy who deserves prove it contract, which is JJ's former teammate Ben Simmons. Well, first of all, that's not how the cap works in terms of just let a player go. It's a guaranteed contract. So letting a player go, if you just waive Jared Vanderbilt, congratulations. His money is locked onto your books and there's nothing you can do with it to shed him. Now, if you waived and stretched him, it would still be that, but it would be spread out over 5 years. As far as Ben Simmons, I don't know why his name has popped up recently. I don't know. For years, I was hearing the Lakers need to bring Dwight Howard back, even past when Dwight Howard was a NBA caliber player. Maybe now it's Ben Simmons. I hope the best for Ben Simmons. I'm just not. I just don't think going and signing Ben Simmons is the answer to the problems for the Lakers.
It's about where I'm at too. There'd been some rumors recently that he wants to come back to the NBA, so maybe that's why his name is popping up a bit. And in a vacuum, that's a big defensive player that is exactly the type of player that we've been kind of pining for post all of these offensive acquisitions. But I think the limelight of LA is that's always been a thing with Simmons, that I think that LA plus he doesn't, I think part of the reason why things went the way that they did in Philly is just he didn't like all of the attention. I don't think it would go well.
All right, let's go.
I mean, he can't shoot. That's
Pete, you last show you set a record. We got a $50 super chat. Man, you just keep on rolling. We got a $100 super chat here.
Whoa,
man!
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you to everybody. But yeah, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate that. This question or comment says, thanks for all the great content. Knicks, Bron fan, so I've watched every Lakers game for the last 8 seasons, and your videos make it a blast, even in the Westbrook era. That being said, very happy to not have to worry about Rob player option Palinka anymore. Good luck. You know, guys, I've said it a bunch of times. Wherever LeBron winds up, I wish him all the best and hope he has success, unless he's playing against the Lakers, of course. But I hope things work out great for LeBron and he gets, whatever the final chapter that he's looking for is, I hope he gets it.
Yeah, I think there's a crew of Laker fans that were LeBron fans really that sort of joined here that are leaving. I've gotten a couple of comments similar to this of like, enjoyed your show, but I'm on my way. And just happy trails. Like LeBron is a great Laker in my book. He's, you know, jersey's going to be up in the Raptor in the Raptors someday. And I've enjoyed the run. So thank you so much for the super chat and the comment. But good luck to you guys wherever you might land.
All right, let's go to this one here. Kuminga and Matisse Thybulle are still my priority, but with a Memphis logjam with Boozer, Jeremy Grant, Omax, Isaiah Stewart, and Hendricks, could GG Jackson be gettable for Dalton Connect plus the second or the swap? You guys tell me, what do you think is this just an eye of the beholder? What is Dalton Connect's value around the NBA on a $4.2 million salary with the team option for another season at about $6 million and change after this?
I think he's like, take a flyer, right? Basically, you're not asking me to give anything up. There's a ton of exceptions, whether it's trade exceptions and things like that, that are around the league that he could be absorbed into, where the Lakers could trade him and the other team wouldn't have to give anything back at all. That I think that there's probably a team around the league that's like, a, you know, good athlete that can shoot on paper and that certainly started out on fire with the Lakers, that I could see a team taking a flyer on him. Jovan, do you? And this is part of that bigger idea of, hey, can we get Rui to come back? It would require, I think, like, because I think that we could probably send Bronny to wherever LeBron lands, and that would work out. And then we could stretch Vando, so we're in control of that. Really, it's only finding a home for Dalton that gets you to, I don't know, $13 million-ish of starting salary, that you start getting in the range of these type of starting fours that we're hoping for. Do you see that value? And also, I like GG Jackson quite a bit. I do think that in a vacuum, that would be a good pickup. I just think we sort of have to stack those salaries to add up to the starting four that I think we need.
I like GG Jackson, and I would do something along these lines as a starting point to the question. In terms of Dalton, I think he's more of a neutral value contract, where, to Pete's point, it's probably some team talks themselves into, this guy was a former projected lottery pick, slipped a little in the draft, had some flashes his first couple months in the NBA, and then got traded, got the, you know, set back, and then just hasn't been the same player since. So maybe someone can talk themselves into trying to unlock some untapped potential there. But yeah, I mean, I would say at best it's neutral or like a slight positive. I don't think anyone is viewing Dalton as like a first round value, yeah, or even like a late first round value, you know, asset. So, you know, to me, it would still be like, you're kind of at the neutral starting point, and then you're adding things on top of it to get up to GG. I would say my read on Memphis is Memphis values GG more than this package. And, you know, he has been someone that they have had teams inquire about before, and even like first round pick territory, and they've not wanted to do that. So I feel like that would be something that they are like, this to me might be selling a little low on him based on how they previously valued him. Doesn't mean they wouldn't do it. Doesn't mean they won't eventually sell on him. But I think if you're looking at, even among this group, I mean, you could argue he has the second or third highest potential of, you know, obviously Boozer's in a different class, but like post Boozer, like he could be the second longest tenured Grizzly among that group. So I think I would actually maybe be looking at like Omax or Hendricks or someone like that as maybe a more gettable player.
When you guys look at this year's Lakers roster, on the topic of Dalton Connect, who we talk about Adu Thiro, we talk about Carr. Dalton is the kind of the forgotten guy in all of that, the forgotten younger Laker. I guess he's not actually all that young. Technically, Jake LaRavia is younger than he is. But nonetheless, is there opportunity for Dalton Connect on the roster as it's presently constructed? Let's not forget, he came to a roster that had LeBron and AD, and that was the build. Is there opportunity on the present build of the Lakers for Dalton Connect to bounce back?
I don't think so. I think there's too much history for there to be a future here. And I think a guy like Cam Carr getting drafted is high-level athlete that can shoot, very similar player, you know, profile-wise to Dalton, but a, you know, even better athlete, and I hope a better shooter. I think that's eventually what his downfall was, is that I think you need to be good at the main thing that you're good at, that he was. Now, he's a garbage time superstar with his three-point shot. I swear to God, he hits 70% of his threes when the game's a 20-point game, but in the big minutes, like, yeah, Jovan, I just think that Carr getting drafted sort of puts yet another guy. I think in a very basic level, he just needs a fresh start.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I forgot if I mentioned this on my show or on here, but I was looking into Dalton's splits during the season, and across, I think it was the second quarter, he shot 23% on threes this season, and the third quarter, he shot 20% on threes. So, like, it was kind of like in the meat of the game, in the heat of the action, he just was, I mean, that's an unplayable percentage. That's worse than Jared Vanderbilt. Like, he just was not making shots to the level of the thing that Dalton Connect is supposed to do at the highest level, is shoot the ball and be a high 30s, if not 40-ish percent three-point shooter. That is his NBA skill as of right now. And the fact that he could not do that at the requisite level, or has not been able to post trade nixing, like, I think he needs a fresh start, and I just don't think it's going to work in LA.
Agree. 100%. I think the best thing for him and the best thing for the Lakers is for him to wind up somewhere else. What if Tari takes the qualifying offer since he's not a starter? I mean, I think that the Rockets will probably come to terms on a deal. I think the reason they structured the Marcus Smart deal is so that they could match an offer for Tari Eason. The way they went about that, making sure they weren't going to be hard capped at that first apron. So I think he winds up sticking with the Rockets. Like, it could wind up being, I suppose, in theory, the same thing could happen with Peyton Watson. It could end up being a staring contest into August and September, the way Jonathan Kuminga was last year. That's always possible with restricted free agency. But I don't see Tari Eason leaving Houston. And I don't think ultimately he will take the qualifying offer. Most of these guys are not going to be in that mode. That's kind of the nuclear option for them. Guys would much rather have the long-term security, even if maybe it's a little bit less than what they were hoping for, rather than rolling the dice on free agency a year later.
Restricted free agency is so stupid to me. Like, it's an oxymoron just to start out with. Are you restricted or are you free? You can't be both at the same time.
I love that.
I want to get a Pete restricted free agency rant, like a full one.
You'll get some rants over the years, for sure.
Yeah. Should sign Rui first and Kuminga, then Sexton Wave.
Well, Wave, yeah, no, that's not happening.
Yeah.
I think it's Rui or Kuminga, too. I think that, correct, like, if Kuminga is going to take a cheap deal, it's going to be somewhere where he's going to be able to play. And same's true with Rui.
That's the lure. That's what you're offering. Hey, we know we can't give you the money that you want, but we can give you the opportunity. We can give you the spotlight, and you can earn your next big payday by doing that. Although that's kind of what Kuminga has been trying to do for a couple of years now, and it hasn't quite worked out for him. But say, hey, here's the LA spotlight. We got opportunity on the wing, plenty of minutes. Here you go. By the way, if you could take Rui or Kuminga, who are you taking?
Give me Rui, man. Rui's a Laker. Like, and he fits the idea. Like, I don't know. I'm okay with replacing Rui, but like, he's got to be a better player than Kuminga to me.
Yeah, and I think one underrated aspect of this entire transaction cycle that I don't think people are talking about enough is there is a really unproven nature with the guys that the Lakers are bringing in. Colin Sexton and Walker Kessler have never played in a playoff game. They've never made the playoffs in their respective careers. Quentin Grimes has only been in the playoffs a couple times. Mamu, I believe once, maybe twice, but I think once. And both those guys had rough showings in this past postseason. Quentin Grimes, his minutes were reduced at times during their couple series, and Mamu was played off the floor and progressively into a smaller role. And so there's this nature of, like, you know, half the guys haven't even played in the playoffs. A couple of them haven't had the best playoff showings. Whereas the guys the Lakers lost, like LeBron, Marcus, Rui, playoff risers, guys who, I mean, we don't need to go to LeBron's career, but like guys who, at least even in the context of like that March run to where they were at in April and what they did against Houston and OKC, I think all those guys played even better than they played in March and like really brought it. So that's an underrated element, I think, within kind of the in and out element of the roster. And keeping Rui, I think you know what Rui's going to do. He's the greatest three-point shooter of all time in the playoffs. So that's where I do see like the Kuminga upside defensively, and that would be where, if the Lakers went that route, there's probably more upside and untapped potential with Kuminga compared to Rui. But Rui's great at his job, and I think the Lakers had success with him as a starting four before, and maybe that, you know, slot him in there. You got Grimes, you got Kessler, and maybe that's good enough defensively to make that lineup really elite.
Yeah, I agree with everything we said there. I would choose Rui as well. And I also think contractually, if let's say you can get to $7 million, $10 million, whatever, with Kuminga, you wouldn't have bird rights on him. He'd be a one-year contract. He'd be operating off of non-bird rights. Whereas Rui, he's been on your team for the last few years. He would come with an inherent no-trade clause or an implied no-trade clause. But it's similar to, he could decline it if he wanted to. Jackson Hayes did it. But you would also have bird rights on Rui to retain him, perhaps after that, and give him a bump if he does decide to stick around and everything works out there. But I would also go Rui for all the reasons that you mentioned, and contractually there's an advantage there too. What are the ways we can realistically improve at the wing position? Kuminga, also, do you think there's a genuine threat Luka walks next summer because this roster cannot compete for a title? Well, I can tell you that he is under contract for another year after that, so he cannot walk next summer. I guess, do you guys think is there a world where Luka looks around next summer and says, yeah, this isn't it? And then we're talking about Luka the same way that the Bucks were talking about Giannis. Maybe it'd be a similar situation, 1 year away from free agency. That's obviously the nightmare scenario. Is that the world that you expect we could be living in a year from now?
I mean, who knows? I can't answer that. Sure. I do think that they're so determined to kind of make their star happy, sometimes to their own detriment, that, you know, they promised Luka this, we're going to get you the center that you want, and they did. And if we find ourselves this next offseason with the team still wanting and not being good enough, and thinking that Luka thinks we need this and that to be able to go that route, like, do we have the assets to do it? I don't know, right? We will see. But I do think that they'll move heaven and earth to try to make Luka happy. So I mean, we'll see, but I feel okay on Luka's long-term future. Where are you at on that, Jovan?
I do too. I think it's partly going to depend on, do they find this extra starter, or like how does the rest of the roster come together? And then if they aren't able to pull that off, are they able to do something at the deadline? And then just like ultimately, what's the ceiling with this group? Because I look sometimes at the things that come out in the media, and there was, I've referenced this now a couple times, like within a matter of a few days, with sourcing close to Luka, you have an ESPN story saying that he wants an A-list center and shooting, which I think the Lakers delivered, but it's also, I want to be competing for a championship yesterday, and viewing it through, like, are we real contenders? Are we, like, I don't, you know, we are saying we don't know if the Lakers could have conceivably constructed a roster to be on the bar with OKC or San Antonio. I don't think Luka feels that way. I think Luka expects to be on on par with those two teams. And then you had an Athletic report coming out that they're on the clock, and that if they don't deliver, that there could be a chance he twists their arm next summer potentially. So I think that was exerting some pressure to some degree with the stakes and the offseason on the horizon. I'm curious, Pete, because you've talked about this for going on a while now. This summer, the summer of 2026, that was also in the ESPN story, that when Luka got there, they promised him summer 2026, you'll see, we're going to deliver, what we're going to bring it to you. Do you think they did enough? Because I think they got the foundational guy in Kessler, but like, is their championship equity materially different today than it was ending last season? Like, I don't know the answer to that. And I think they got the big piece for Luka, but I don't think it was, I don't think he's like, oh, let's get Kessler and like, let's figure this out over the next 2-3 years. I think he's like, let's get Kessler and I want to beat OKC and San Antonio. Like, do you think they're materially closer to that today? And if not, like, is that maybe leading to this conversation next summer?
So no, not right now. But again, this is the fundamental split between you and I right now of, I think there's another move coming, and you're evaluating it on based on what it, but no, we lost LeBron James and we were the best.
Let's say they get Rui or Kuminga. Uh-huh. Do you think they're materially like, are they pushing OKC or San Antonio to 6 or 7 in a 7-game series as constructed?
I think the team that could beat OKC in San Antonio is the version where LeBron takes the contract. We're talking either Rui or Kuminga would take, and he's not going to do that. And that's something that I think Luka would understand. And I think that's, it is what it is. I think they are, what I wanted us to be was sort of have a championship team on the horizon. If you're able to fill the starting fourth spot with a credible player, which Rui would qualify for me. I think you're at that point. I don't think you're done. I agree with both of your guys' perspective of, I understand the consternation about defense on the perimeter. I also think we can convert what we have into similar level players that are just more defensively tilted, and we're on the road to that. I think that either Adu or Cam Carr popping is going to be really important, because I think that'll be our best trade asset going forward. If Cam Carr ends up being good and he's making, what, $3.5 million this year, probably 4 point something next year, and under team control for like, what, the next several years, Trevor, then you start saying, oh, okay, well, we need a better power forward than Rui. Rui and Cam Carr, who's a good player, but now, or Adu, same type of thing. And then you get that type of upgrade for that type of player. So we're not there yet to Jovan's question, but I think that we have the capacity to get there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Adu Thuro, Cameron Carr, obviously, ideally, you need both of them to hit this year. I think it's an absolute necessity that at least one does, based on the present roster construction. Yep. And we'll see if they're ready for that. And maybe that's part of the reason why the roster is built the way it is. Maybe there's great confidence that that's going to happen. I'm concerned about putting that on such young players. I hope they do find another wing out there. If it's Rui or somebody else, you're right about, I've thought about the same thing with LeBron. I'm like, man, this roster really looks like LeBron would be an awesome fit, right? Right in that spot. I was joking on my show last night. I'm like, it's like 2 a.m. Pacific time. Is Rob sending that you up text to LeBron right now? Like, is that because if he isn't, maybe he should be. Just
that number's like, blocked. LeBron blocked his number.
He's like, I will throw in a player option. I will get this over the finish line.
All right, we're gonna do one more here. Lakers got younger, more athletic. Pelinka overpaid because he had little leverage and is under the gun to get a team together. Good start. Rome wasn't built in one day. Need better wings. Maybe young guys pan out. Thanks, big fan. Appreciate that sentiment there. I think we're in agreement with everything here. That maybe overpaid a little bit. Leverage could have been a situation. I don't want to go back and relitigate any of that. Or, you know, what's done is done, and we'll see what moves forward. But yeah, need better wings for sure. And we'll see if the Lakers can find those things here in the coming weeks. And maybe it's a young guy that ultimately takes off. And that's the other exciting thing that I want to finish things up with. The Lakers play basketball tomorrow.
Tomorrow we got a game. Let's go.
I'm excited for that. I'm excited. All right, let's wrap. I'm assuming you guys don't have anything to add on this one.
No. Good synopsis.
I would just quickly add, like, we touched on it a little bit. We didn't really spend a segment on it, but I do think Adu Thuro and Cameron Carr, like, they are in prime position here to ascend within the rotation. And I think the bar to clear is Jake LaRavia and Jared Vanderbilt. And I think one or potentially even both should be able to clear that bar. So if it ends up being the projected starting group for now, and they don't end up getting the wing, but it's still like Sexton, Ayton, Adu, and Carr, and they've earned those spots and they're playing to that level to be true rotation players. Like, that to me is the one way here with at least the current build that it starts to change how I view the roster. Like, Trevor made the point that it is a lot to put on two young guys, a second year guy who's a second round pick and a late first round pick, to be like, you guys are the athletic defensive saviors of this rotation. So I don't know if that's realistic, but if one or both hit, obviously that either gives you a trade asset at a minimum, or that gives you just a very valuable young athletic rotation player. So I think they're betting big on those two guys, and we'll see obviously how that pans out.
All right, everybody, busy time around the Lakers right now. We appreciate all of you being here. Again, double check for me. Check and see if you're subscribed. If you're not, hit that subscribe button. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Super chats we didn't get to, I am going to save those. Appreciate all of you for joining. Guys, this was a great show. Really enjoy. I was really looking forward to talking through all these moves with you guys, and had a great, great time breaking this all down with you.
Super fun. Let's do it again.
Let's do it next week.
All right. We'll be back next week, everybody. Thank you again. Till then, see ya and stay safe.